I just wanted to start with Parsha Shoftim. I wanted to start with an op-ed piece that I saw in the New York Times. Just thought it would be very, very fascinating. It's called Congregations Gone Wild by Jeffrey McDonald from Massachusetts. And he says American clergy is suffering from burnout because congregations are changing their attitude about what they want from a pastor. It says that they are expected to entertain the congregation, and so that the congregation become a consumer. In this transformation, clergy have seen their job descriptions rewritten. They're no longer expected to offer moral counsel and pastoral care sessions, or to deliver sermons that will make the comfortable uneasy. Church leaders who continue such ministerial traditions pay dearly. A few years ago, thousands of parishioners quit Woodland Hills Church and so on, when their respective preachers refused to bless the congregation's preferred political agendas and consumerist lifestyles. And then he says about himself, I have faced similar pressures myself. In the early 2000s, the advisory committee of my small congregation, Massachusetts, told me to keep my sermons to 10 minutes, tell funny stories, and leave people feeling great about themselves. The unspoken message in such instructions is clear. Give us the comforting, amusing fare we want, or we'll get our spiritual leadership from someone else. There's a saying in Yiddish, the Vis Christelzach Azeh Yidelzach, that as the Christians do, you know, the trends and the movements within the Christian world will reflect themselves in similar ways, in parallel ways in the Jewish world. So I guess the idea that keep the speeches to 10 minutes, under 10 minutes with funny stories and make you feel good about yourself is also part of the Yiddish world. I would suggest, I guess, if any Rabbanim listening as advice, if someone asks you to do the same, you could look very serious and say it's a shayla b'chukai seim lo selechu. Now that the goyim insisting on having it that way, we need to stay away from it, and it needs to be longer speeches, no funny stories, and make people feel a little bit bad about themselves. The first one is a chinuch about why we need to have shoftim v'shoytrim. Now, I want to explain the hidden agenda, the hidden question. He's really addressing an issue. It says here we need to put in place shoftim v'shoytrim to have us do what's right. Now, we're not talking here only about civil matters, like just to make sure that, you know, everybody obeys the laws and the society runs. We're talking about the big part of the Shoftim v'Shoftim's duty is religious things just as well, mitzvahs essays, mitzvahs los essays, etc. His question is, you don't want to coerce people into doing something. If a person does something because he's coerced, that's a getter of onus. And therefore, the person that's not really what the Torah wants. The Torah wants people to recognize, understand, and do that. So what's the point of this? So I think that's the point that the Chinuch is addressing. Sheyosh ha-mitzvah niglahu. Shimadov hazeh namidoseinu. We're going to establish Torah that way. Biyos emas alufeinu shaseinu ha-hamoin. Because the fear of the leaders, the judges, will be on the populace. Because they get used to, it's habitual to do what's right because of fear, they will then do it out of love when they recognize the emes. It's like Chacham said, that when a person gets into a habit, it becomes second nature. Kloima, ki kemoisha teva yechichad mashke bakesh, just like a person's nature pushes a person to do something, kein hahergel agodel choizben teva kayam. So too, a lot of repetition, a lot of training, a lot of habit, it becomes second nature to him. Viachichenas bederach hagel olam, and will force us to go on that road. When they go on that road and they do well, the good will become attached to them, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be happy. So I want to explain this chinuch because it's an important piece. We train our children with force, davdavka patch or anything like that, but the simple fact, as parents, we're telling them, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. A school imposes values on a kid. It doesn't ask the kid for what he would like to do. It imposes certain things on him. And the Torah provides a stick, and if we don't do it out of recognition. So obviously, as long as we're doing it because it's imposed, and that's the only reason we're doing it, then we will not, that's not a fulfillment of anything. But as something becomes second nature to us and it becomes natural to us, then we can actually do it because we want it, we understand it to be right. For instance, if a person, let's move out of the religious sector, if a person is not trained to eat with forks and knives or anything, we don't impose on him manners, and he eats naturally with hands and feet and whatever comes his way, and then when he gets older, it's very difficult to retrain yourself. When a person is trained to eat, most of us as adults would feel very thankful we were trained to act with manners, and we feel very, very comfortable with it, and we appreciate the fact that we don't eat with our hands or with our mouths or whatever it is, and it becomes something we appreciate. Torah and mitzvahs, once they become a habit to a person can then actually appreciate it. So, same thing, a person who's taught to do things, to be neat and organized and so on, at the beginning it's because he's forced and so on, but as he gets older, he actually can begin to appreciate it, and he likes organization and so on and so forth. So, many schools of chinuch imposed a lot of training. So just like military training, a soldier, once he's passed his training period, he relishes the fact that he has in him the ability to snap at attention, to walk a straight line, to keep his things neat, organized, punctual, etc., etc. These become you. So it's possible through a habit that something actually becomes you and it doesn't remain imposed. That's one aspect of you. We've mentioned some other times, the other places where it speaks about doing things as a habit. You also give a person the ability. For instance, if a person sleeps, if a kid sleeps wherever he wants to sleep, when he becomes an adult and he needs to get up early, it's very, very hard. He doesn't have the ability to discipline himself and say, if I want to get up at 6 o'clock, it's 6 o'clock. It's by training him as a child to get up 6 o'clock, you're giving him a tool for doing it. If it's, you know, and many, much, so it's important to understand training is, and imposing correct values is good, but a person needs to make that transition. At some point, you need to fill the child or yourself with the ahava and the understanding of why it's a davar tov. It's not just, well, it's my habit. For instance, a person that picks up a habit to, I don't know, do something not pleasant, a sort of chews on something, or bite something, whatever it is. So then the person can't shake it off because it's a habit, but he recognizes a bad habit and wish it wasn't. But good habits that person has, person is very happy it became part of his nature, and then it reaches fulfillment. Okay, the second one is a Sfarnu. The Sfarnu addresses the fact that there seem to be a lump together three things that seem to have nothing in common. The Pasuk speaks about Asherah, the Pasuk speaks about a Mum, and a Matseva, and Dayanim, and all of these things that don't seem to have any real Kesha. So the Sfarnu is going to give us an understanding of what is the common denominator of all these Inyanim. Lesidcha Asherah, he says, Hevi Shlosha Domim Me Inyan Dvarim Sheim Noim Kefi Achush V'nim Asen Himom Aruchni. It is something, the Torah is giving us three examples of things that present themselves remarkably well, but have serious spiritual moral flaws. The first one is an Asherah tree. Tree is beautiful. They used to use it for temples, and it is beautiful. And that's obviously why they picked it. But since it's come to symbolize Avodah Zarah, it's ugly. Just like we look at Christian music and art, etc., part of it needs to, it obviously is very rich and beautiful. I mean, they invested a lot in the arts and music, but a person should always say, you know, because of everything wrong with Christianity, this should be repulsive. Just like, let's take another example, a handsome, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nazi is a Nazi, and the fact that he is quote-unquote handsome, but we find it repulsive. We need to learn to look at things from the Tzad Ruchni, not the way they present themselves. Secondly, v'chein naktim hadofas atzerek ruchishem uskuf adayin. A dayin, it says by the same token, if a dayin looks very presentable and handsome and so on, but he's flawed, then we need to disregard it. The second thing is the matseva, which was like a type of, it was a one stone used as a mizbeach, which actually was considered to be very, it was considered to be extremely appropriate for using for a mizbeach. It became cancelled because it became a tool for Avodah Zarah, and once it became a tool for Avodah Zarah, we don't, we can't use it anymore. And he said the inyan of the matseva was a way in which it's as if we always stood before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With the eagle, we lost that. And he says this Sfarnu that this is this represents a person who had flaws in his early youth, even though now it's covered up, but we need to address those flaws if they haven't been addressed. So things that the Chet HaEgel had a hand in and wasn't completely niskaper, it's most. Third of all,
when it comes to the Matseva, is it because the Avodah Zarah next are doing it, or is it because
The way it says in Chazal seems to have Avodah Zarah, he says it's because they use it for Chet HaEgel. It represents Chet HaEgel. I'm not sure how or why, but that's what he says. And the third one is, if you have an animal, it says over here that a mum is something that makes the animal moos. Now, the mum is not something that an animal makes it, should make it moos, because when somebody buys a cow for milk, he looks at its udders, he looks at its health. The fact that it may or may not have a good eyelid is something that doesn't bother it. The fact that it might have a split on the lip, I mean, he's not marrying the cow. The cow is big, fat, husky, healthy, tons of milk, or an ox that plows. It's not a beauty contest. And yet the Torah says that a flaw that you may not see, in other words, the farmer doesn't see that flaw because that flaw also devalues it. He says that it's like you would find somebody who is a Talmud Chacham, but he's not somebody who's an influential person, and yet he has some mida that is not. So when you look for leaders and you find somebody that has a flaw, we tend to shy. We need to recognize to push it away. This is an idea that's extremely nagiah to us as Americans. We've gone from reading articles by candidates to hearing sound bites to watching interviews. So how photogenic a candidate is really determines his success. I still remember my first memories of an election was Kennedy and Nixon. And The election was decided on the fact that Kennedy was young, good-looking with it. Nixon was older, nervous, and kind of kvetchy-looking. Amazing. So if you ask people, well, what do you like about Kennedy over Nixon, and they say, young, dynamic, leadership, fresh, da-da-da, you ask a person, could you list them? Could you exactly point what it is that... And they would say, well, just look at him. I mean, don't you see that energy and that leadership and that vision? I mean, you know, and we live like that. We live as a society where everything is taken by its chitzenius. You'll excuse me for using a muscle like this, but I need to share it. There were two goyas that died at the same time. One was Princess Diane and one was Mother Teresa. Both were made into saints, idolized as great saints, despite that one of them was a person who, again, to believe was reported, lived with the poor and the lepers and the hungry and everything, a person who gave of her life everything for chesed. And again, I'm taking the report at face value. The other person was a troubled person who lived a very troubled life, maybe to no fault of her own, but didn't do much more than that, that could be passed on. And yet, people spoke about them the same breath as being saints. And obviously, the pictures of the latter adorned many more walls than the previous, simply because one was attractive looking. But the sainthood was conferred based on nothing but the people liked the way the person looked. It's mind-boggling. I mean, the person was a troubled person, and maybe you could pity her, but there was nothing that you could point out of sacrifice in their lives. Yes, there was one well-photographed photo op traveling through Africa to work for HIV or something like that. That was from the noted accomplishments. A quick tour of some countries with a lot of photographers, but how do you like? But that's the way it is. We as a country, television has done a lot to bring in that culture, that looking at the person, seeing the person outside, that's it. I'm gonna share another story. There was a person in the Mir many many years ago, young man, came to Erfurt Kufa, very fine young man. His father-in-law was an extremely wealthy chassid of the Satmar Rav, not a modern-looking, kind of clean-shaven and so on, but Satmar from the Haim, as they say, and very supportive of the Rebbe, and, gave a lot of money for the Moistis. And he came to visit his son-in-law. His son-in-law was in the Mir. Reb Chaim Shalom was just alive at the time, and he went to see Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim Shalom lived in three tiny rooms, as threadbare as the Meir Yeshiva was. So it was just another piece of the Meir Yeshiva. It cordoned off for Reb Chaim. And he's standing outside, nervously fixing his tie and his jacket, and they ushered him in. He came out, a while later, and he said he doesn't know why people are so impressed with Reb Chaim Shalevitz. He says, there's nothing in the house there. He says, chip tiles, an old table and a few chairs. Like, what is it to see about Reb Chaim? It was stunning. I said to myself, I began to understand why Satmar Rav was very makbid that his house, the areas of the house that were public, were extremely well appointed. They had golden chandeliers and so on. He himself was not nene from anything. Himself never ate. But it was extremely because the people that he needed to deal with would only understand that. If a person could walk into Chaim's house, not only not admire the simplicity and the greatness of the person, but actually say, well, a gadol who lives in three small rooms with chipped tiles and an old table is not a gadol. I mean, wow, we've come a long, long way from the time when it says in the Pasuk, Adam Yira Leinayim Vashem Yira Lelevav, that's what you learn in Cheder, that you look at the inside, not the outside. Like upon him, the Sfona says, these are three Azharas that carry one thing in common. You ask yourself, not what does it look like or what does it sound like, but what does it come from. Let me share this one more story, I guess, in story mode today. I grew up in RJJ, and there was a yeshiva, and on Shabbos Yontev, that yeshiva minyan of very chashev people, the yeshiva there, and the Bnei Torah of the area davened there. The Baal Tefillahs were very beautiful. One of the Baal Shachris was somebody who, an older man, who was very kind of not exceptional as a Baal Tefillah. And somebody sort of hinted to one of the Rosh Hashivas that maybe they should try to find somebody with a richer voice, and so on and so forth. And Rosh Hashivas Revitzin was sitting there. It was Revitzin Vashavchik, her husband actually was a Baal Musav, and he was a gorgeous Baal Tefillah. But she was sitting there. She was a very outspoken person. And she said, this Baal Shachris was 5 years in Siberia and kept his Yiddishkeit in Mesiras Nefesh. He works as a bookbinder, and his Yiras Shamayim is exceptional. And this is the Shliach Tzibur. The voice, go to opera if you want to hear a good voice. But the most beautiful davening is from somebody who suffered 5 years of grief for it. It's perspective that unfortunately is killed for us. Okay, the next one is a shtickle over here from the Barbanel about the Bez Nagadol. And this is the parasha Bez Nagadol. So he says, Moshe v'Sanhedrin hoyo mushvim Hashem yis'ala b'ruach elyon. The Sanhedrin had Ruach HaKodesh. They had a hashra. In other words, what they paskin had in themselves, a certain hashra milamala. And that's why there was 71. It represented the 70 skating with Moshe Rabbeinu, to teach us that the spirit of Moshe Rabbeinu was on them, and the ruach of those skanim of prophets. In other words, this was kind of parallel to the Nevuah and Klal Yisrael. And that's why they sat in the Beis HaMikdash in the Lishkat Gozes, to teach us that just like the Shechina that in the Beis HaMikdash dwells on them. And he says, and that's why they had to be in the Lishkat Gozes in order for the Pesachim to be Chal, because that's where they had Ruach HaKodesh. And because the Shechina is with them is why they're called Elohim. Like it says, Elohim Elkim Yitzav Adas Kel V'Kerav Elohim Yishbot. So in other words, the Pashup Shad is that Elohim means all sorts of judges, anybody with authority or power. The Avraham says in Bezin specifically, it's because the Shechina is there, that's what they call Elohim. V'hoyezeh, lefi shamishpotim atoyrim, ein hakavonim milvad hakisho medini. The Torah of Mishpotim, the tachlis is not only to have society function appropriately, avol hoyezeh tachlis ha'asivim, v'sheyochol ha'shef alakayim v'seinu. It was a vehicle to have Ashuras HaShechina. Let's talk about this point. This is a very significant point. How do we understand justice? Very, very, a point that's been debated over the ages. And the laws that we feel today society can pass are laws that help society function well. Keep criminal element away, make commercial interaction be organized, expected, we know what's going to happen, we know what we sign, when we sign, we know that the other party will be forced to comply, and so on and so forth. Punishments are seen either as, by I think a minority of people, as corrective. In other words, by punishing criminals, you help make them non-criminals. Or, as I guess the more pragmatic approach, it's simply a way to stop that behavior. If a person knows that X, Y, or Z is waiting for him if he does that, it's a deterrent. So it's either corrective or deterrent. The concept of justice as being an ideal in the sense something not part of the material world but sort of an idea on its own, is iffy. In other words, we all feel a sense of the unfair, revenge, justice. We have those instincts in us, but does it actually exist? Certainly, the court is not the place where that happens. We have an intuition. There's something that we call natural law. We have an intuition that we, if somebody does something wrong, he'll get punished. But that's not. Law is meant to be very practical, so on. If we take a look in the Torah, there are all sorts of. It's funny. There are halachas, and then there's a patchwork of takanas to make it more viable for society. And the courts, but the Dima give them tremendous powers for ad hoc type of things, shashot, tzricho lekach, and so on. And it almost seems as if the Torah is not practical enough, because you need all these takanis, whether it's a ksuba, whether it's this, whether it's that. I mean, machlok is a ksuba, right? Or not, but al kaparim, probably hold it to rabbanan, and all of those things seem to be. A lot of takanas are needed to circumvent it. We have kinyanim in the Torah, and yet we have minhag medina, and so on. The answer is like this. The Torah itself does put down justice as an ideal. Ideal in this case, I mean, as opposed to the ideal versus the real, versus the material. There is something called justice, and there's an hagav HaKadosh Baruch Hu called mishpat. And that includes all of a person's activities, ranging from Anav Lamakum to Anav Chaveroi, whatever. A Bezdin, when it imposes din on the world, is bringing down the divine order in the world. There is also a need to have society function well, and for that you use ad hoc type of takanis, punishments, deterrence. But that's a secondary aspect of din in its big form. And that's why we look at din as being not secular, but rather belonging to the world of the sacred, because you're really, really drawing down mishpat from Shechina into Klal Yisrael. So he says, and just like the Karbanis themselves, he said, brought about a dveikus between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael and the Mizbeach, so to Mishpatim. In other words, when the picture of your activities mimic HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that brings us to Ras HaShechina, and that's what Mishpat does. Yes?
So Rebbe, in the Torah about a misa of a criminal.
Yes.
It has to be al pishnayim edim and the sidur hasra and how they have to
right.
say it. And I would assume that would be a very rare thing to happen.
Correct.
But the misa, I'm sure they put many people to death by locking them in a room or different ways that.
Right. Or shashot tzricho lekach, yes.
Right. So is that mean to say that that's not really din when that's
correct.
Happening? It's
correct.
Just we
correct.
Want society to function and
yes.
this is a way to either
yes.
deal with this problem or.
Right. It also appears. If you look at the role of a melech, it says melech yamid aretz b'mishpat, the mishpat that the melech, and the Chacham speak about it, the mishpat that the melech brought was more for these situations where under the formal legal proceedings, it was a way to act swiftly, decisively, and to keep society functioning and on a secular level rather than imparting some ideal din. Just like And I guess the counter to it would be, you have military laws, like in a place of occupation, whatever it is, where you say to yourself, the time, the situation, the needs require dealing with things as they are, rather than relating to some great legal system. So yes, that was true.
I guess I'm wondering how you're really revealing Hashem's Ratzon, I guess, if what the Mishpat is so rare. The actual mishpat is going to be so rare, and that generally how things are going to be done are through mishpat hamelech or takanos and the like.
Well, first of all, the mishpat takan itself is also the concept of mishpat takan. But here, mishpat is you are sort of presenting a mahalach of this is the way it ought to be. A person who's done X and under such and such a circumstances has been found to do it. Then why is the proper way of dealing with it? It's a model. It's sort of an ideal model, and that's why it maybe happens rarely. But when it does happen, we've played out something that carries itself a lot of divine content. And he says, and that's why you have all these psukim about that anyone who's done a dinemis is like a shutf, a kadosh baruch hu, and he explains the shutfis is that just like in Maisa Bereishis, you had a hashpah of a kadosh baruch hu to the world that was the strongest, clearest hashpah. So too, when someone is done a dinemis, he creates that hashpah, and certainly the bez nagadol. So that's why he and then he says. Because they're tapping into a higher source, that's why they know things you don't know. And Ramal says that, and this is an interesting point, we'll see, we won't see this week because I think Shaitim is the biggest parasha we have, about 50 pages. But in different places we have seen that the chiyuv to listen to the Bez Nagadol is no matter what, right, wrong, or whatever, they are, everything would disintegrate without that, and you need to have that, just like the Havdol in a secular society, you need to have a final instance of justice, and that's it, because without that, you're going to have simple anarchy. So that we understand. But he says further than that. The Pasuk is saying, he says, if you went to this Bezin, that Bezin, the other Bezin, and if you don't know, come to the Bezin, and they will tell you. So he says, it's because the other Batadinim work up his Seichel alone, basically, and therefore, you say to yourself, if Reuven didn't know, Shimon, Bezin A didn't know, Bezin B, Bezin C didn't know, what are the chances Bezin D will know? The Torah tells you that the Bez Din HaGadol has in itself a nekuda of Ruach HaKodesh and Hashras Ashchina, and that's why they will more likely know than the other Bat Adinim. It's not just a little more smart, a little more experienced, more that. We're talking about people that qualitatively are different. I want to add a point to this. We said that the Lo by Ruach HaKodesh. The question is always Lo ba Shemayim hi, and Nevuah is not supposed to be done, and so on and so forth. All those questions. The Rambam says, when he speaks about Ruach HaKodesh versus Nevuah, he explains Ruach HaKodesh is the ability to know and understand things that it's clear to you that it's not because your natural mind had the ability to reach that, but somebody's added a dimension of understanding to you, as opposed to prophecy, which is a communication from God to you. Dear sir, you are now to do X, Y, or Z. It has nothing to do with seichel or das or havana. It's rather just a kind of a command. So, so that cannot be used to pass halachas. And a navi that does try to pass halacha with nevuah, the Rambam says, is a navi sheker by definition, and we kill him. Not good. But Ruach HaKodesh means not that you get a message this or wrong. Your mind telescope, so to speak, understands much further, and you're aware of the fact, to understand Pshat in this Rashba, when it says that it was written by Ruach HaKodesh, it means that, it doesn't mean that a Malach came and told him. It's a level of understanding that it's a Siyata Shmaya that's given to him, and not something that he was born with. That's a very important point in understanding these type of Amar. So he says, the Bez Nagadol has this level of Ruach HaKodesh, so their understanding goes much greater. Their understanding is much deeper. And therefore, the Rabbi writes in a lot of places, for a fear Ruach HaKodesh based on the Shein, and everyone asks, is it Leber Shemayim? It's kind of asked it on the... But Ruach HaKodesh Rambam defines is an understanding, so it's seicheldik, but an understanding that the person is keenly aware that it's not innate, not native to him, it's something that came beyond that. Okay, we'll hold it here.